So, hey guys, welcome back to Caffeine and Crime. I have got a caramel cappuccino. I'm ready to jump in to this episode. We have made it halfway point for season 5, and today we're going to be talking about Stacey Castor. Stacey's story has made national news, and she was also named the Black Widow. This case takes place in Weedsport, New York. Her story is now a Lifetime movie, and her life was quite the same as a Lifetime movie. So she was the daughter of Jerry Daniels and Judy Eaton. I don't really know much of her childhood, unfortunately. I felt like I couldn't really find a whole lot on it. From what I could find, it started when she was 17 years old in 1985, and that's when she met Michael Wallace. They fell in love immediately, and they were married and had their first daughter, Ashley, in 1988. In 1991, they had their second daughter, Bree. And I mean, their life was pretty, I guess you could say, average. Like, when it comes to any marriage, you don't really know a whole lot of what's going on behind closed doors, but from the looks of it, they seemed happy. The family had little money, as Stacey worked as an ambulance dispatch and Michael worked nights as a mechanic. According to Stacey, with the girls growing up, she felt that Michael was very close to Bree, showing favoritism, and that Stacey had to make up for that. And because of that, she said that she became best friends with the oldest daughter, Ashley. Despite the look of a happy family and a happy marriage, they soon grew apart from each other, and it was rumored that they were both having affairs. Jumping ahead just a little bit, we're in the late 1999 when Michael starts to feel really ill, and family members say they remember him very unsteady, coughing. He seemed very swollen, and his sickness just kept going on and on over like a holiday season. So what they thought could have been just a bug or a flu just kept going on. His family did tell him that he should go to the hospital and, you know, see what's going on. But before he did, he died in early 2000 before. And their daughter Ashley was 11 at the time and was alone with him. She blamed herself for his death. She said that she knew that he was very sick that day, but she just thought nothing of it because, I mean, again, they thought it was just like a random bug or flu. The doctors told Stacey that her husband had died of a heart attack. With all the symptoms that he did have, Michael's own sister was very skeptical and requested an autopsy, but at that point, Stacey just kind of wanted to be done with it, and she wanted to be able to bury her husband, so she refused, saying that she believed the doctors were correct. Jumping forward to 2003, Stacey married David Castor. He was the owner of an air conditioning installation and repair company, and Stacey served as his office manager, so she was no longer an ambulance dispatch. They had a decent marriage together, but he kind of let it be known at the beginning, which I feel like for me would always be like a red flag, but he kind of just told her, like, I had a kid, I raised a kid, you know, I am not really wanting to raise more kids. And I kind of feel like that probably put a little bit of a cramp in between them and Stacey's own two daughters that were still living in the house at the time. But apparently, they all, like, made it work. It may have not been perfect, but they made it work. He just didn't really have a whole lot to do with Bree or Ashley. Ashley actually said that it wasn't until she was in high school and graduating that she finally had some type of relationship with David, and that it was more so of a friendship instead of really, like, a stepdad. Like, he never really filled the spot of her dad. But she respected him and had a good friendship with him as she graduated and grew older. In 2005, I guess there was a little bit of a strain on Stacey in David's marriage. For reasons that, you know, marriages can be tough. But around 2 p.m. in August of 2005, on one afternoon, Stacy called the local sheriff's office. And she tells him that her husband had locked himself in their bedroom for a day following an argument, and she was trying to call a cell phone and he wasn't answering. She said that he didn't go to work and they worked together. So she said that she was worried about him. She said that he was very depressed. He had been going through a really hard time. And on top of that, it was, I believe, their like 2-year anniversary and coming up, and they wanted to go and get away for the weekend. They wanted to go to an amusement park, and they weren't going to be able to do it by themselves because they still had her younger daughter, Bree, in the home. And they didn't really know what to do with her. They had to cancel their plans. And Stacy said it just kind of put an even bigger damper on David's mood, and that he was already been pretty depressed. He was even more depressed that they weren't going to get out of town and kind of just spend the time together. That it ended up being a huge fight and huge ordeal about not going away for their anniversary, to which ended with him grabbing a bottle of alcohol, heading to the bedroom, slamming the door and locking it and staying in there. She said that she would come to the door and try to get in and he wouldn't say anything to her. She said it didn't dawn on her until the next day when she went to work and he still wasn't there. She started to worry and told the sheriff that there was a gun in the bedroom. So Sergeant Robert Willoughby from the County Sheriff's Department arrived at the scene and tried to get into the bedroom. He said that he did hear a faint TV or radio in the background, but did not get a response, so he did kick the door open. In the bedroom, he found David Castor face down, naked, laying dead in his bed in a pool of vomit. Apparently, the room was a mess. There was glasses everywhere. On the side table, there was a bottle of cranberry juice, a bottle of what looks to be an apricot, like brandy, and antifreeze. It was a half full glass of bright green liquid. The sergeant does remember Stacy coming in and screaming, "He's not dead, he's not dead." Besides Stacy, her daughters were devastated as well. Even Bree, who wasn't even that close to him, it was kind of a repeat of what happened all over again, although this time it was by suicide. This was just a reawakening moment of losing another person like this, just like they had lost their own father. The coroner reported that David had committed suicide through a self-administered lethal dose of antifreeze. But when police had went back to the house to just check for any foul play to close this case, they had found a turkey baster in the trash can. And what was even more strange was that they found Stacy's fingerprints on the antifreeze glass. David Castor's DNA was on the tip of the turkey baster. So they began to kind of question Stacy and wonder if she had anything to do with her husband's death. From the looks of it, they believed that she could have used this turkey baster to force feed him once he became too physically weak to refuse it. So detectives decided to dig a little bit deeper on this case by wiretapping into her phone lines to see if they can catch her in a conversation, maybe confessing to it or letting anything slip. They listened to phone calls for any unusual conversation. And if that wasn't enough, they also set up cameras overlooking her house and also at the gravesite, because she buried David right next to Michael, her first husband. And their thought was that maybe, you know, if she really was a grieving widow, she would be at the graveside. Or maybe she was guilty, would go to the graveside and maybe confess something. Who knows, really? Everybody grieves in different ways, so it's kind of hard for them to pinpoint this being any type of evidence, I guess, against her, but she did never go to the gravesite. They did question her about the weekend, and she said that nobody was home with him. She said that after he acted that way to her, she told the girls to go spend the night at friends' houses, and then she said she also went to a friend's house where she called him several times to try to fix things, in which he never responded. What she didn't know was that the police were looking into this, and they looked at her phone records, and there wasn't several calls. There was actually only one call to his cell phone, and it was minutes before she made the 911 call to the sheriff's office for the house check on him. Very suspicious. Now, you might wonder, because at this point, Ashley, like I said, has already graduated high school, but her looking back on it was she never really seen anything as strange from her mom. She blamed herself for the first death, which was Michael, saying that she had come home from school and seen him making weird faces and not doing so well, but she knew that she had a certain amount of time to get to Bree's school to pick up her little sister, so she had to leave. And she said on the way, she called her mom and told her what was going on, and Stacy freaked out and said, "I'll go home for him, go get your sister." She said it was like a normal reaction that any mom would have about her husband, and she still blamed herself for it, but said that her mom's reaction was n normal at the time. And then moving forward with her mom and David, she said that it was a good marriage until working together started to make the tension a little high at times when she was left to look at the, look after things at the office all the time, and he was out just doing whatever he wanted. And also looking into their financial things a little bit more, you can kind of see where she had to pick up a lot of the slack because he wasn't really spending his money on bills and taking care of the family like she was. So tensions apparently were high because of financial issues, but also because they really weren't on the same page when it came to work life and home life and all of that. And the added anniversary that came up with them not being able to go and then getting into a fight and then him drinking kind of just threw everything over the edge. Now, you may wonder, like with this timeline, why we jump so much further than this, but as any police investigation goes, usually it takes so long. So things kind of just went on for them. Their life just kind of went on. They had to move on from all of it, and the girls did. They moved on with their lives, and so did Stacy. Although there were still the red flags of Stacy getting everything in David's will, even though he had a son, a grown son, who you think would have had something from that will, she had it all. She also sold his family business and had all of the income, from that, or all of the money from that. And again, she just kind of moved on with her life. Police did find that strange. But at the same time, what they were working with was mainly a distraught couple, a woman who claims her husband was very depressed and with mental health. You just never know. But even then, all of David's friends and family said that there's no way he would have taken his life. Like, none of it added up to them. They thought that he was doing well, and they had seen him around that time and said that they did not think anything like this would have happened. So it still left the police with this open investigation, trying to put the pieces together. But meanwhile, like I said, Stacy and the girls kind of moved on with their lives. When there was a confirm on the evidence that was taken from the house, which at this time took a little bit longer to get back, and they seen the DNA on the turkey baster and on the glasses, they decided that there was nothing else they could do but to try to link both of Stacy's husband's deaths that happened about 5 years, or in a span of 5 years, together. So in 2007, they exhumed her first husband, Michael Wallace's body. The toxicology screening ruled that he had also been killed through antifreeze poisoning. After they had the confirmation that he had also died the exact same way, they decided to show up at her house and ask Stacy to come to the station for just follow-up questioning, to fill out some paperwork, and just overall close this case. And mind you, it's 2007, it's been 2 years since this has happened, so I'm sure she was kind of like, oh, you know, okay, kind of panicky, because it's like, it's been 2 years. So they go in, and what turns out to be questions, it turns into a full interrogation, and you could tell that she was pretty shaken up about it, but she still decided to talk to them. They told her that they had exhumed her first husband's body and that they found traces of antifreeze in his system. And this is where Stacy starts to panic a little bit, but she still goes on to say that she believes that David killed himself and knew how to because of a show or a movie they had watched together where a woman killed two of her husbands with antifreeze. She called antifreeze antifreeze. And she said that he had gotten the idea from the show or movie, and that that's how he probably decided to kill himself. They still had not much to go off of with this. They really needed some hard evidence to be able to pin both cases on her, so they did let her go in hopes of getting something from her phone calls, but unfortunately they believe that she knew her phones were tampered with, because when she left, she called a friend to say that she was so panicky and nervous because she didn't do it. So investigators decide that they need to reach out and talk to the oldest daughter, Ashley. It was Ashley's first day of college when investigators came up to her school to question her about her father's death and to pretty much inform her that not only he, but also her stepfather had been poisoned instead of having a heart attack or dying of from suicide. Ashley was so upset and got very angry, and was more so angry that they were pinning all of this on her own mother. Like, how could her own mother do something like this? She called up her mom, and she said that her mom had invited her to come to the family home in Liverpool and to just drink together. And she said that they had been through enough emotional stress and they just needed to relax. And Ashley agreed because it's her mother. And she said that she was her best friend. She knew that her mother and her best friend could have not done the things that these investigators are saying that she did. So the following day, Stacy and Ashley got together to hang out, just to talk about things, to drink together, and it was just like any old time of them just hanging out as not only daughter and mother, but best friends. And 17 hours later, Ashley was found in a comatose state on her bed by her younger sister, Bree. Bree yelled and said that they needed help, and that Stacy then ran and made the 911 call. And on the 911 call, you can hear the mom kind of almost weeping, crying, and saying, you know, it's my daughter. I think she took something. I think there's something in her throat. Ashley, oh my God, oh my God, she's freaking out. At this point, Bree had, I guess, got up and moved. And a couple minutes later, when she had returned, that is when she found the suicide note beside Ashley. The note appeared to be in Ashley's, murder confession, in which she admitted to having killed her father and stepfather. Stacy took the note from Bree and later gave it to the paramedics. And the test revealed that potentially fatal painkillers had been found in Ashley's system and that she most likely would have died if taking her to the hospital had been just a few minutes later. But as luck would have it, unfortunately, Ashley did wake up, and when the police questioned her about the murders and the suicide note found beside her, she said that the last thing she remembered was her mother making her an alcoholic drink that was something that she had never done before. She said that it was kind of nasty tasting, but that she did drink it because she trusted her mom. She said, at first I kind of refused it because it was nasty, but I later eventually drank it because I pretty much, she was in her feels about, you know, these investigators thinking that her mom had something to do with all of this. She then told the officers that she did not write the note and was so confused about their questions and accusations. Ashley couldn't believe this suicide letter. It started off by saying mommy, so it was a note to her mom. And she pretty much said at the very beginning, when you read this letter, just remember, I love you, and everything I did is because I love you. And I'm sorry all of this is happening to you, but now everyone is going to know what really happened, and they know it wasn't you and it was me. It goes on to just explain how she did it, why she did it, and that cops were saying that all this stuff about her mom and how she couldn't let her mom take the blame for it. And that was why she was going to end her life and just confess to all of it. There was not only an empty bottle of vodka in their house because they were drinking vodka and Sprite, but there was also 4 painkiller bottles completely empty. It was literally a miracle that Ashley was alive. At this point, after getting confirmation from Ashley, the police found Stacy out in the hospital parking lot smoking a cigarette, where they arrested her. For the murder of David Castor and the attempted murder of her own daughter, Ashley Wallace. Stacy's trial was in February of 2009. The first witness on the stand was Ashley, to which Ashley claimed that she did not kill her father, who she was only 11 at the time when he died, nor did she kill her stepfather or write the suicide note. Stacy's defense claimed that Ashley was very suicidal before, that she was very depressed, and her mental health was really bad ever since her father, which, duh, makes sense. She lost her father. But they also claim that she wasn't close to her father, nor was she close to her stepfather, and that was about all they really had on her. But the prosecutors made a point to throw it out there that not only was the suicide note typed, not like written, so you couldn't see a handwriting, it was typed, but also was the changes in David Castor's will as well. Nor were Ashley's whereabouts. She was not home. She was not in the house when her stepfather had died. And the letter that was typed as a suicide note was typed the day before Ashley's death, around 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. in that time period that Ashley wasn't there. There was a timestamp on the computer that showed when the letters were typed, so that was good enough evidence for them. And it also showed that it was the exact time that Ashley would be on campus at college in class. But one key thing that you have to remember is that Stacy's phones were tapped. So they went back at the time-stamped time on the computer to Stacy's phone, to where they could hear what Stacy was doing. And all they could hear was a keyboard tapping noise. Stacy took the stand. She denied everything, but her body language said otherwise, as every time she said no, there was almost like a knee-jerk reaction of her head shaking, saying yes. It's very strange. She also was completely emotionless. She did not show any emotions for losing 2 husbands in a 5-year time period. But she stuck to her guns and said that her daughter committed these crimes. But what you may remember from earlier is that when the police questioned her, one of the things that stuck out to them was how you know how you have a conversation with someone and they keep mispronouncing a word? You guys probably do from listening to me on this podcast. Whenever I mispronounce something, you guys probably are over and over saying, Allie, it's pronounced this way. But it's kind of one of those ordeals where when they interviewed her years prior to this, she kept saying antifree instead of antifreeze. And the coincidence of this was that over and over in this typed letter was also antifree instead of antifreeze. And that was also a key moment where they're like, she wrote this letter. If they didn't have enough evidence already to support this, I think the tapping on the phone and hearing her tapping on a computer is evidence enough, in my opinion. But it is pretty, I guess not funny, but just kind of like a wow moment when you see this word repeated in this letter. And the cops connected that from years prior to her saying that. And again, some might argue that maybe the daughter calls it that as well. But I don't know. I feel like it's just like something that's just one of those like eye-catching moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, this pieces everything together. This trial would go on for days. And with the arguing of back and forth of what they knew from the antifree to the typing sounds over the phone, and also back to Ashley being depressed already, and also that her father always favored Bree over her, so there was jealousy. It went back and forth until February 5th, 2009, when Stacy Castor was found guilty of second-degree murder and the poisoning death of David and of attempted second-degree murder for overdosing her daughter Ashley with drugs and vodka. The courtroom was packed and she had her eyes closed the entire time as the verdicts were read. On the same day for her sentencing, Chief Assistant District Attorney Christine Garvey asked the judge to impose the maximum sentence as possible for the brutality of not only David's death, but also she criticized Stacy on how she partied in her backyard with friends like nothing was happening when Ashley was in the house dying. She said she is cold, calculating, and without any emotion for what she has done. Human life is sacred. Stacy Castor places no value on human life, not even her own flesh and blood. To Stacy Castor, human beings are disposable. David's own son spoke up and said, Your Honor, she is a monster and a threat to society. She has created so much pain and death with this, creating multiples of pain and death in the families of those she has hurt. Judge Fahey had told Stacy that he had never seen a parent attempt to murder their own child, and in order to set their child up for a crime they themselves committed, and declared Stacy in a class all by herself. He sentenced her to the maximum of 25 years to life and for the murder of David Castor, and to another 25 years for the attempt to kill Ashley. For forging David's will, he ordered her to serve an additional 1 to 4 years in prison. The trial had lasted for 4 weeks, and to end it off, it was a very emotional speech from Ashley herself. She told the judge she hated her mother for ruining so many people's lives, but still loved her for the bond she originally had with her. She said, and I quote, I never knew what hate was until now. Even though I do hate her, I still love her at the same time. That bothers me. It is so confusing. How can you hate someone and love them at the same time? I just wish that she would say sorry for everything she did, including all the lies. As horrible as it makes me feel, this is goodbye, Mom. As hard as you tried, I survived and I will survive because now I'm surrounded by people that love me. I'm going to do good things in the world despite making me, in every sense of the word, an orphan. End quote. And she would have to serve over 51 years before she became eligible for parole. She was placed in Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women in Bedford Hills, New York. And her earliest possible release date would be June 15th, 2055. And she would be almost 88 years old. In April of 2009, There was a 2-hour 2020 special on her. There's also, like I said, been a Lifetime movie about her. And although she is not officially a serial killer or defined as one, it is said that she would more than likely have killed again. Further examination in an episode of Forensic Files, there is an episode titled Freeze Framed, and it's talking about Stacey Castor. And in this episode, it talks about the antifreeze murder cases and similar cases that were in 2008. And soon after, there's also a episode from the series Sex, Lies, and Murder, where an attorney, a district attorney in the case, pointed out that she may have murdered her own father. He died on February 22nd, 2002. His name was Jerry Daniels, and she visited him at the hospital where he had a minor lung complaint, and it had come out from Stacy's first husband's family that they believe that she could have killed her father, Jerry, because she had visited him the day before his death, and when she came in, she had an open can of soda that she gave to her father to drink in the hospital. And she was the executor of his whole estate. So wrap that around your head for a minute. Stacy was found dead in her cell on the morning of June 11, 2016. They didn't really know how she died. They said that it was undetermined for a while, but later on the DA's office came forward and said that she had died of a heart attack and there was no evidence of suicide or foul play. It is quite the story, another Black widow that was out there, and her life really was a Lifetime movie, that is for sure. Furthermore, she did end up having two tattoos put together of two teddy bears that she said represented the two husbands that she murdered. Those are my words, not hers, but point blank, she had two teddy bears on her tattooed to resemble the two husbands. And it's also stated that apparently David's grave has been moved altogether, and both of them maybe, I think, have new tombstones. Because she was originally going to be buried right there with them. And what's very crazy about this is that she literally had them lined up. She had not only Michael and David's graves there, but she also had her father's grave right there as well in the same like area. And she had her name on both Michael and David's tombstones so that she could pick where she wanted to be buried. Ugh, but again, David has been moved. He has a new tombstone, and I'm not really sure where she was placed. Stacy was someone who wanted people to think that she had tragedy after tragedy in her life. Her first husband died of a heart attack. Her second husband died by poisoning himself with antifreeze, and that her daughter had also attempted suicide. But as her plan unraveled, it showed the true Black Widow she was. My heart goes out to Ashley and Bree. It's just so devastating to lose so many people. And then, like, I mean, out of all people, your mom is the person that you should be able to trust. And you, in this case, they had her their entire life until all of this came forward. Like, I mean, how do you wrap your head around your own mother committing things like this? And then, like, pinning it on you. It literally just sounds not even like a Lifetime movie, but a horror movie, honestly. But let me know what you guys think. Check out the blog for photos and all of that. If I missed anything from this case, all of my notes were from various places and very scattered. So if I did miss anything, please shoot me a message on Instagram and give me a follow there at Caffeine Crime Podcast, and I will add it to the blog for everyone to see as well. Thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. I hopefully will be back next week with another one, and I will see you then.